Hey, everybody, let's have an AA meeting. My name is Kat, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip speaker meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year more sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual and our own personal stories in their own language and from their own point of view, the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And our speaker tonight is Jamie. So I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, I'm Jamie, and I'm an alcoholic. Okay. All right. I'm going to tell you the story of what happened, what it was like, and what it's like now. I definitely respect NABA's singleness of purpose. My story does involve outside substances other than alcohol. I was born and raised in Atlanta, in Cobb County, actually. And I had a pretty normal childhood. I was an only kid. And I guess what sticks out the most to me growing up was that I definitely felt... I couldn't recognize it as alone at the time, but definitely different from everyone around me. I had a really hard time making friends in school. It was really a rough start for me socially. I was younger than everybody else in my grade, and I was just really scared all the time. I remember that definitely. A lot of anxiety, terrified of kids my own age. And I was used to spending a lot of time alone. You know, that was like the biggest thing of my childhood. It's just I would spend a lot of time alone. And I kind of lived in this weird, like, imaginary land in my head. Because I think right from the very beginning, like, reality just wasn't good enough. I really didn't like what was going on around me. So it was like I needed to make things up in my own head of what was... How could I make this better? Things started getting weird when I was like 14. A lot of my friends started drinking and using drugs, and I made the conscious decision, like, I'm never going to do that. I was raised in an alcoholic home, and it was just not on the agenda for me. And I wore it as like a badge of honor. Like, I was like, I'm never going to drink. Like, I'm never going to use. I see what that does to people. I'm just not interested. And I think, I mean, it was within 6 months of me making that promise that a drink was offered to me. And I couldn't say that, like, I took my first drink and it was absolutely amazing and I knew it was right for me. Because that definitely wasn't my experience. I really didn't like it. I felt really out of control. My brain, it was just like everything was fuzzy. I did not like it. But something compelled me to do it again. And it was off to the races then. It really was. Within a year, I was doing hard drugs and drinking a lot. My parents separated. My mom moved down to Florida. And I think by the time I was 16, I had a house up in Alpharetta to myself. That was not good. Like, 16, have a car, have a license, should not be on the road, and have a house to myself in high school. And that's kind of when I found who I was socially. It was like, I'm the girl that has all the parties. Like, come on over, we'll get wasted. And it was real close after that that people didn't really want to get messed up around me. Like, I think I started scaring people that I really wanted to be friends with. They were not very interested in the way that that I used, the way that I drank. And I really didn't understand it. I thought that was the goal. Like, you're supposed to get as messed up as possible. You're not supposed to remember days at a time. And why don't you want to be my friend? Like, that's the way this is supposed to go. It was within a year that I tried to run away from home. I was put on Amber Alert. My boyfriend was reported as my kidnapper. Everything got really dramatic really quickly. My parents, like, sent me off to ride horses up in Vermont, and everything will be fine. Like, just you stop doing what you're doing. I came home. I did not stop doing what I was doing. It continued to accelerate. And I think it was that point in my life, it was around 17, that I remember waking up one morning and being physically ill and realizing that, like, I didn't have control anymore. You know, like, I could fake it for long enough that I had control. But it was really, really evident. And my solution then was, let's go get messed up. Let's pretend like I didn't just remember, like I didn't just realize this. So it was really scary. Like, I remember exactly where I was in the hallway of my mom's house, and I just fell down. I was like, I'm sick, and I know why I'm sick, and this is really, really scary. But that was the only solution that I knew. That was the only solution that worked for me, was let's go get messed up. So let's see, I got kicked out of the school that I'd been in for a very long time. It was a really nice private school in Atlanta, and I got kicked out my senior year. I lied about all of it. You know, I was the victim to all of this. And I finished out my senior year at a really small private school and did not learn anything, did nothing productive. I pretty much got high and got drunk the entire time. I got a scholarship to the University of South Carolina, and full ride. Like, I was ecstatic. I was like, yay, it's time to go. I'm going to stop doing what I'm doing. I'm going to go to this awesome SEC school. Things will be fine. You know, like, maybe I'll finally fit in somewhere. I did not fit in there. I got there, and it was rough. It was really, really hard. I thought for a very long time, and I think now looking back on it, it was a result of ego. Like, I really did believe that I don't know that I could handle anything. And I got dropped off in Columbia, South Carolina, and I was terrified. Like, I didn't know what to do. And the only way I could relate to people was going out to the bars. And, I mean, they don't ID in 5 points. South Carolina is like, okay, whatever, you come on in. And I think that was really my first experience with having other people that were strangers, that didn't know me. You know, like, everyone that I got messed up with in high school had known me since I was really little. And, I mean, these were strangers. I lived with three other girls in the quad, and we were all on the equestrian team together. And that was my first experience with strangers being scared for me. I remember it was, like, 2 months in, and I had been medically redshirted because I had torn my ACL and my meniscus, like, years before this. And just didn't know. It was like, my knee pops out and you duct tape it back together. That's what you do. And they're like, well, we can't really let you be an athlete in that condition. So we're going to medically redshirt you. And that meant that I didn't get drug tested. That meant that I got to do whatever I wanted. I'd show up to workouts if I wanted to. And I remember it was like 2 months in, and oh, this little Canadian girl, I feel so bad for her. I mean, she was allergic to gluten and, like, everything. Like, she could not drink. She didn't want to drink. And I must have scarred her for life. I mean, she was from, like, a very small town in Canada. And I remember I walked out of my room, and I'm holding this 7-Eleven cup. And it was full of rum. And I'm just walking out. It's, like, 7:30 in the morning. And she just got back from workouts. And she was like, can I smell your cup? And my heart dropped. And I was like, oh, this isn't fun anymore. This isn't fun. Like, this girl is worried about me, and she's checking my drink at 7:30 in the morning. Might have a little bit of an issue. And I don't know. I mean, I would have realizations like that, and I would make all these promises to myself, like, okay, I'll only drink this weekend, and 2 hours later, I'm gone, you know, and or, like, I'm not going to go back to Atlanta to to do what I do. I'm not going to go back there. I'm not going to do it. And I would be, I mean, I drove back and forth from Atlanta to Columbia, like, probably two times a week for 3 months to get drugs. And I lost it. I blacked out the windows in my dorm room. I, like, listening to Tool all the time. It was real rough times. And my roommates were absolutely terrified of me. Like, I mean, God, one of my roommates, she was turning 19, and my solution was, like, or, like, my gift to her was, like, an entire bag of shrooms, and I was like, let's go to the bars. Like, it'll be fun. And she's like, I don't really want to do this. I was like, crap. I'm not fitting in again. Like, I'm constantly out of it everywhere that I go. Like, I just don't fit in. And I thought for so long that, it goes back to 14-year-old me. Like, drinking is going to make me cool, you know? Like, I'm going to pick this up and everything will be fine. And the way that I drink isn't cool, you know? The way that I use isn't cool. People are scared for me and scared of me and scared of what I'm going to do. November rolled around, and it was about time for finals. And, I mean, I hadn't been going to classes for a while, and there was one exam that I knew I needed to do before I got back to Atlanta. And I was walking, and this moment is the clearest moment I have from 2010 to the middle of 2011. I'm walking to class, and I get this call from my mother, and it's like 8:30 in the morning, and she's like, you need to sit down. I have something to tell you. And honestly, I'm so self-centered and so selfish that, I mean, I knew it didn't have anything to do with me, you know? Like, I was like, okay, somebody's sick. Something happened, like, I don't, whatever, just kept walking. And she was like, you know, you got your blood tests back, and your liver's failing, and you have hepatitis C. Like, what have you been doing? And I was so confused. I was like, what does that even mean? Like, what is that disease? I don't understand. And then she told me, she was like, you get that from sharing needles. And my heart just sunk. I was like, but it wasn't even that I was sick. It wasn't even that my body was failing. It was more so like I just got caught again. And that's just how my mind worked at that point. It was like, do anything that I can do to, like, keep this part of my life as secret as possible. You know, like, this is how I function. This is how I cope. I don't want anyone to find this out about me. You know, I think there's a part of me that knew how unacceptable it was, and like I could get away with pretending to drink normally for like a night or two, but that I knew that people would start to turn, they would turn their heads, you know. So I went home to Atlanta in December, and I think my goal at that point was to continue to reach oblivion as much as possible. I know the events that occurred from then to when I got sober, but I mean, it's all very, very fuzzy, and I know how lonely and scared I was. Like, I'm very aware of that. Like, I dropped out of college. I threw away the scholarship. I started doing things that I never thought I would do. I moved back home. I moved into my father's house for the first time since, I mean, I was in middle school. And I showed up on his doorstep, and I was like, hey, I'm moving in. He was like, excuse me? What do you mean you're moving in? And I was like, no, I'm here, and I'm moving in, and I'll apply to Georgia Tech in the fall. That was reality to me. I'm failing classes and just dropped out of school, and no, it's okay. Like, I'll say whatever you need to hear so that I can just keep doing what I'm doing. And I moved back into his house, and I mean, I do not remember January to the middle of March. And there's, like, brief moments. Like, I remember, like, sleeping with a cricket bat. I remember, like, sleeping with a Rottweiler at the end of the bed. I remember, like, peeking through the windows a lot. I remember hearing the alarm system go off in the house when it wasn't going off. I remember waking my dad up, like, on several occasions, telling him that there's people living in his basement. I mean, I think he was really, really concerned about my mental health. And both of my parents were very much in denial about what I was doing. I mean, I can't blame them. I would be too if, like, my little girl is, like, losing her mind. But around March is when my dad started to get the swing of things. There was a lot of money missing. I mean, day two of moving into that house, I found out where safe was. And, I mean, I never even thought that I would go there. I never thought that I would be stealing money from my parents. And it became an everyday thing, and it was real fast. My dad realized there was a lot of money missing, and he was like, I'm gonna take you to get drug tested. And I was like, I don't have to pee. Sorry. He's like, well, I'm gonna cut your hair. So he cut my hair. And I mean, I had like this huge gap right here. It was just like bald spot for about a year. It was a good reminder. And, I mean, he came back and he didn't even know what I tested positive for. Like, he didn't understand any of that. And he was like, I think it's time that we check you in somewhere. So, I got dropped off against my will. I was not happy about it. And that was my entrance into sobriety. And I was not happy about it. I was not happy being told that, hey, you may have a problem. I was not happy being told, you need to stop what you're doing. I was like, you don't really know. Like, this is going to, I don't know what I was thinking. It was more so like, maybe this will get better. Like, maybe I'll be able to manage it better. Like, all those empty promises are coming back, you know, of like, I'll just do it on the weekends. Like, I'll tone it all down. I'll tone it down. And that's really what I thought I was going to get out of it. And thank God that's not what I got out of it. What I got out of it is something completely unexpected. It took me about 3 months to pull my head out of my butt. I was not having it. Like, I really was not having it. Like, I was introduced to the 12 steps. The whole God thing scared me. I went to an Episcopalian private school, and I mean, by the time I was 8, I had proclaimed I was an atheist and that this whole God thing was a joke. And I just, like, I couldn't imagine there being a power or, like, a spiritual entity in this world that I deemed so dark and scary. And I don't know. I really was fighting with all of me. I was fighting this whole thing. I did not want to get sober. I did not want to stop what I was doing. And I think what it really came down to is that I was absolutely terrified of what my life would look like. You know, like, I had no idea. Like, how do you function? How do you manage? Like, how do you do everyday things? Like, I can't do any of that without being under the influence of something. And I remember the last time that I used, I remember waking up in the morning, like, I made this promise. I love promises. Like, I love making promises to myself. This one I actually kept, which was interesting. I used the night before, and I sat there, and I was like, you know, if I wake up in the morning and I feel the need to put a chemical in my body, then maybe they're right. Like, maybe I do have a problem. Maybe I should try this whole thing out. And I woke up the next morning, and I don't think I've ever been closer to being suicidal than I was in that moment. It was very painful. And I knew that I had to get a lot off my chest. I knew that I needed to be honest. That was the one thing that I did get out of the 3 months of being around the program, was that, like, I needed to be rigorously honest. And it took me about, like, a full 48 hours to get everything out and off of my chest. And I remember my counselor looking at me and asking me, like, do you even want to be sober? Do you want to do this? And I looked at him and I said, I don't know. And he was like, this is the first time that I've ever heard an honest thing out of your mouth. And I don't know, it hit me right then that I didn't have to impress anyone. I didn't have to show off or, like, be the best at sobriety or be fully dedicated and, like, do all of these things. Like, it was, like, it really was about me, you know, and figuring this out. And it became very real and very vulnerable and very scary. I mean, I don't think I looked in a mirror for 2 months. I wore pajamas every day. It was a really rough time period for me. But I was honest. Like, everything else was falling apart, but I was honest. And that was May 16th of 2011, and I have not picked up since. And my experiences since then, like, I really have no reason other than God as to why I didn't pick up again in that first year. Like, I really don't. Like, I think, I mean, it's very evident to me that something bigger than me was working in my life, and even I was unaware of it at the time. I don't know. My first step the first year was very dramatic, very full of, like, war stories. This is how I use, this is how I drank, like, this is what defines me as an alcoholic. The more time that I got, I realized that it's the way of thinking that's messed up with me. You know, it's the way that my brain processes information. You know, I just see the world differently than the average person. And I don't, like, that was a terrifying realization. I didn't like that at all. I was very angry about it. I was like, I would love to have a drug problem. I would love to have a drinking problem, you know, but I've got, like, a thinking problem. I'm insane. That's it. It's over for me, you know? And thank God for steps 2 and 3, like, really. I mean, I'm baffled by this program daily. I really am. And when I got to the second and third step, I think my first experiences with it were very much people-based. I just handed my life over. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Please help me. And thank God for sober alcoholics. Like, seriously, this program and this fellowship and the unity that's found here, like, I would not be here right now. I would not be here right now. And I just remember for the first time, I was talking about earlier with a sponsee, like, I felt relief. I didn't even know what it felt like. Like, it just, like, I felt lighter and very uncomfortable. I was being honest was so painful at first. Like, it really was. Like, it was not fun. Being restored back to sanity, like, I'm comfortable in insanity. I don't understand what sanity means. It's uncomfortable. I just realized that it was easier to go to sleep at night. It was easier to wake up in the morning. It was easier to take this one day at a time and to keep going. And, I mean, man, when I moved on to my fourth and fifth step, like, that, I mean, it's seriously one of the most powerful experiences that I've had. And looking back on it, like, I can laugh at it and be like, that wasn't even that honest. But it was what I knew as honesty at the time. And to be able to relate to another sober alcoholic female of, like, this is all of me. Like, this is, like, everything that's messed up about me. This is, like, this is my story, and it's scary, and it's vulnerable, and I did a lot of messed up things, and I'm not proud of them, and I'm embarrassed, and I'm humiliated. And to feel the love and tolerance that was given back to me as a result, like, there's nothing like that. That's so powerful. It was so unexpected. I couldn't even, like, fathom it. I can't wrap my mind around that. That there's no judgment here. You know, that's something that I didn't know existed. You know, I spent so long judging myself and judging the world around me that was my truth. That was reality. You know, I didn't understand that people existed like this. You know, I mean, I really did think that everyone was a liar here for a long time. Like, I was like, you're lying. Like, there's no way that you can accept what's coming out of my mouth right now. But it's true, you know. And my first experience with 6 and 7 was very rough. I sat for a long time between 5 and 6. And during that time, I mean, a lot of ego cropped up for me. I got a year sober. I went through the steps very slowly the first time, because I was in a rehab facility. And I don't know. By the time 6 and 7 got there, it was like a smack in the face again. You know, there was no longer the tablespoon of humility. It was more like this bucket of humiliation, and it was awful. Like, I hated everything about it. I was like, I have defects? Wait, no, I don't have defects. Like, you don't understand. Like, I'm perfect now. Like, I've gotten a year sober. Like, I'm great. And I don't like it. It continues to show, like, this program continues to show me that, like, that I'm never going to be that, and that's okay. You know, the perfection is unobtainable for me, and that's fine. You know, I can love myself today, and I can like who I am without having to strive for that. You know, it was like this constant, like, constant unsatisfaction is really all I can say. Like, that's how I live my life. Like, nothing was ever good enough. The only thing I ever found that worked was drugs and alcohol. And those satisfied me for a while. And they were a good solution until it stopped working. Until I felt pain. And until I started to ruin my life and the lives around me. But I moved forward onto 8 and 9 without really ever in-depthly looking at 6 and 7 at all. Like, it was like, oh, it's just that thing. Like, you white-knuckle your defects. You don't live out of them. It'll be fine. All of a sudden, I'm, like, exercising willpower for the first time in my life. But I moved on to 8 and 9, and that was a very powerful experience as well within my first go-around through the steps. And then 10, 11, and 12, like, I just kind of, like, skipped through. And by the time year two came around, I was absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. I was like, you know, this. I don't know if this thing works. Like, I don't know what people talk about in these meetings where they say, like, the 12 steps are the end-all, be-all. Like, this is going to make me feel better. Like, I don't feel better. I don't feel any relief. By then, the obsession had returned, except this time it was an obsession with being normal. All of a sudden, like, it's like I can drink and I can use drugs like a normal person, you know? Like, we'll have a schedule. And I had it all played out. Like, I plotted for months. Like, I was like, and I didn't let anybody know, of course. I mean, God knows. Like, if they found out, you know, I think subconsciously I knew, like, the power of my thought would be taken away the moment I said it out loud. And I was like, no, I want this. You know, my alcoholism had full reign at that point. And I remember just melting down. Like, emotional bottoms are so painful. And I just hit this point where I was so terrified of what my life would look like if I went back out. But I was so unsatisfied and so unhappy and so, like, needy being so, like, being sober or clean or whatever, like, dry at that point. And I remember finally talking to my sponsor about it, and I kind of let her in on what was going on, and she recommended that as well as attending my rehab meetings, I also attended Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And it's like I walked into a 10 a.m., I think it was a 10 a.m. meeting at 8111, and it was a book study. And I bought my first big book with 2 years sober, you know, and it was like, oh, my God, like, this is terrifying. Like, I relate to everything these people are saying. I relate to how this book is written. Like, I get it, you know. All right. Okay. A little bit too much to handle. It was a lot of reality for a Saturday morning. And I think I realized then that, like, I got it. I finally, like, it clicked that I couldn't do 50% of this program. It wasn't going to work. I needed to give 100% in order to get anything in return. And all I wanted was some relief. You know, I was back at a point in my life where I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, and I'm sober. You know, I have time sober. Like, why is this happening to me? You know, my ego was absolutely crushed. I was very confused, very much in pain. So I started attending more AA meetings. Okay, wow. I've been talking for a long time. I started to attend more AA meetings, and I was going to my rehab as well. And then the opportunity came up to graduate. And I graduated my rehab, and I spent about a month and a half crying and just paralyzed, like, absolutely paralyzed. My poor roommate. Oh my God, she moved into my house, and she had been graduated from the program that we were both in for a while. And I remember she walked in on her lunch break one day, and I melted. Like, everything about me just fell apart. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing anymore. You know, like, this one place that I knew was safe like, is no longer safe. Like, I just wanted to get high and drunk a few months ago. Like, what's going on? What do I do? And she recommended that I get a sponsor. The sponsor that I had, I was not using her. There was, like, absolutely, I mean, she had tons of experience, strength, and hope to give me, just as any sober alcoholic has. But, I mean, I would not pick up that phone. So I got a new sponsor, and immediately we started going through the steps. And being taken through the book, like, that is a powerful experience. What I thought had been so powerful, like, in my first year, like, I mean, it, like, quadrupled. I don't even, there really is no words for it. Like, I finally could grasp that I suffer from this disease, you know, and that, like, there is something wrong with my brain works and how my brain works, and I can actually, like, define it a little bit. Like, I've got this physical allergy. I've got this mental obsession. I've got this spiritual malady. Like, it was finally all there in front of me, you know, and I could finally relate to it, and it was in words, and it wasn't like this guessing game in my head anymore. I found my first step, you know. I had a very unsteady first step within my first couple years, and that, I mean, I definitely would not be standing here today if I had not taken that action. And that is another thing that I absolutely love about this program, is that I don't have to wait to feel things today. This is a program of action, and I truly do believe that. Like, all I have to do is bring my ass and my head will follow. That's just been my experience, and it's stayed true. It's stayed true since then. I got a home group that was recommended. I got service positions, which were awkward and uncomfortable, and I didn't understand any of it. And people looked at me like I was crazy because I had time sober, but I didn't understand how any of this AA stuff worked. I felt crazy. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I went through the steps again. And, I mean, I related so much to this book. Like, I really did. And I don't know, like, the inventory process was completely different this time around. Like, there was actually structure to it. And I could actually see, like, oh, I have parts to own. That's interesting. I've got fears, and they're all, like, they all lead in me dying and there being no God. Like, I'm absolutely terrified of that. And I could relate to somebody who, like, I took a blind leap of faith at that point. You know, like, I didn't know my new sponsor very well at the time, but it was like, here it is. Like, I don't know what else to do at this point. Like, I'm terrified that I will drink again at this. And 6 and 7 took on a whole new meaning at this point. I've finally started to understand the amount of God that's involved in step 6 and 7. The amount of the lack of control that I have over the way that I conduct myself is incredible. And being able to see that, you know, and pray for relief of that, and pray to a power greater than myself. Like, I need help. Like, I just don't manage life well. Like, I don't. I'm not very good at functioning. I need help. And that was really the first time that I was able to experience a power greater than me, and it just be me and God. All of my experiences before that, like I said, involved other alcoholics. They involved, like, the power of the program. And this is the first time that I really didn't feel alone everywhere that I went. You know, like, I had like this, like, undefinable buddy with me everywhere I went. I mean, that just made it sound really cheesy, but it's really true. Like, I didn't have to wake up in the morning and, like, say these prayers that I had rehearsed and, like, fake it and be like, yeah, I prayed today. Cool. Like, check. It really was like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm connecting to something. And I don't know, like, the rest, I mean, the process is just absolutely incredible. I mean, 8 and 9 this time around, like, I actually got to go back to people in my past that I had used with and drank with and sit down and seriously make amends. You know, I didn't understand the whole idea of, like, is there anything else I can do? You know, are there any other wrongs that I've committed towards you? You know, And there were a lot. There were a lot of situations like that. I do not remember my past very well. And there were a lot of people that said no. But the humility that I gained from that process is, I mean, it's incredible. And then with 10, 11, and 12, like, I don't, like, for the first time, like, I was able to, like, sit down and see what I did on a daily basis, you know? And it was, and it took on a whole new spiritual meaning of just, like, here I am, you know? And I'm not hating myself for my defects. I'm not hating myself for my bad actions. I'm accepting of it, you know? And where can I improve, and where can I ask God for help, and how do I better me? You know, like, with this, like, single purpose of not drinking again. Like, I'm not going to, I know, it was all related all of a sudden, which was incredible, you know, because I came in here and I was like, all right, I've got this problem, you know, like, I drink and I use unmanageably, but why do I have to become a good person? Like, I don't understand that. Like, I don't want to be a good person. Like, I don't know how to be a good person. Like, I lie, I cheat, I steal, that's what I do. I manipulate, I try to control situations, and I realized then, like, how interconnected all of it was, and how all of it's just alcoholism. That's all that it is, you know, and what can I do on a daily basis, to move more and more towards recovery, you know, because I do believe that, like, I go to bed at night, and I wake up, and I'm still the alcoholic. Like, I am. Like, I, no actions that I took yesterday are going to better the person that I am today. It's just, that's just the way that I am. And I don't, it's been quite a journey. It really has. Like, finishing up the 12 steps, I've stayed in constant step work since then. And it's no longer this, like, oh, I dread it. You know, like, sometimes I'll push it back to the back of my subconscious, and I'll be like, you know, like, maybe I'm sitting on it a little bit. Other things all of a sudden take on a new importance. I gain material things. Like, I'm back in school. I have all these items, you know, and I have to get knocked back down, you know. And it's just, it's not, my life is not as dramatic today as it used to be. You know, like, there, I still have dramatic moments, but there's this, like, overwhelming peace that I never knew was possible, you know, and I tried to get it so for so long, you know, like, I tried to, like, make myself feel that, and there is no way of feeling that, you know, without taking the actions to get there. And I truly do believe that the 12 steps got me there, you know, and they continue to get me there. There are days that I wake up and I'm angry at the situation. I'm angry that I'm an alcoholic at 22 years old. I'm angry that it's me fighting the flow of life, and it does happen. It happens more frequently than my ego would like to admit, but the cool thing is that, I mean, not even the cool thing. I wish there was a word to describe it, but I've got this spiritual toolkit today, you know, and there's, like, little reminders of what I need to do in order to get to a spot of I'm just going with it, you know, like, this is life, and it's okay, you know. I really thought that once I got sober, you know, there were times where I was very angry at the world, you know, like, life should be really good now that I'm a good person, you know, now that I work these steps and I do all these things, like, why isn't life going the way that I want it to? And I don't know when it hit me, but it hit me that life is going to continue to happen, you know. I've been through a lot in my journey, and I never really expected to be okay with bad things, you know, and stay sober through them. I was on radiation therapy for 8 months of my second year, for the hepatitis C, and my liver is now normal as a result of it, and my viral count is zero. And I never thought, like, if you had asked me to experience that while I was drinking and using, I would have never done it. You know, I would have run away. That's the only thing I know how to do. And I made it through that sober, you know, like, by the grace of God. And I never really thought that these things were possible for me. I never thought that I could make it to school on time. I never thought that I could, like, carry out a job. I never thought that I could be a good friend. You know, I never thought that, like, I could make mistakes and then apologize for them. Like, I never thought that these things were possible for someone like me, you know. And being able to do the self-searching and to continue to level my pride, like, I'm able to see that it's all going to be okay, you know, and that I'm okay the way that I am, and that I can continue to work these steps and see these defects and these faults in my character, and like be okay with that and accept that I'm human and that I'm alcoholic, and that things will continue to get better. You know, this book is full of promises, and I mean, I just never thought that they would come true. You know, you read through them and it's like, I can be around alcohol today and not want to drink. You know, I can be around like emotional instability and stay emotionally stable. Like I can be a shoulder to cry on. I can be these things that I never thought I could be before. You know, my life was revolved around me. And that's really all that I knew. So I don't know. I'm running out of words. So I think that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your story. Tim has asked Alonzo to come up and hand out the chips.
Here and elsewhere, we have a chip system. Thank you, by the way. Girlfriend, thank you. We have a chip system to mark our journey or our step through this. And I guess I'll go through it once. It starts in the beginning. Surrender, just for today. If she can get sober, anybody can get sober. Thank you. Anybody want to try our way of life? I'm going to put this up here because that's what I was told. All right. Now, after that, we have 30 days. Anybody? 30 days? 90 days? 6 months? 9 months? Here's the one I actually came here to give. But let me first see. Is anyone else here celebrating a year or multiples? It's ironic how God can kind of work. I don't often come to this meeting. It's not my home group. But I came this evening, and I was delighted. But I came this evening to give this man, my friend, and my sponsee, his four-year chip. Come on up here, Mike. I first met Mike, maybe 4 or 5 years ago at a place I worked, and he was inpatient. And the person I saw then when he first came in scared the hell out of me. I was scared, you know, and I was trying to ask myself, can I take him? And I don't think so. I was looking around for something real heavy, you know, just in case. But he's transformed. He does a lot of service work. This is his home group. He's in the book study. He helps me. I'm supposed to be his sponsor, but he helps me. I'm very honored and pleased to give him his 4-year chip.
Hey everybody, I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. Now, I said I wasn't going to get emotional. I told Alonzo today that this really didn't seem like a big deal. And coming down in here, I got to tell you, I mean, this time 4 years ago, I was in the emergency room at Kennestone, and they made me take a bath. How bad a shape do you have to be in the ER for their top priority to bathe you? You know, that speaks volumes. And in the 4 years, it's just been amazing, you know. Get honest, find God, clean house, and help others. That's really about sums it up, you know, and the world can be a great place. Thanks. Things moved out of my way.
happened so fast and wild. After time, trouble stuck with me. Found a way to blot it out, blind as I could be. Every time I got it going on, knocked back down the signs.
Thank you.